Why, hello, everyone, and welcome into the Farzi Show, presented by Steven Singer of Steven Singer Jewelers. Nice to have you along for the ride. So much to get into today on what was supposed to be a dark Thursday. No games, Phillies off, Sixers eliminated, some OTAs going on there at the NovaCare Complex, which is nice. But during that time yesterday, Keith Pompey lets us know that the Sixers are going to sit down with Nick Nurse. Dave Dombrowski gives a state of the Phillies to the Philadelphia Inquirer. And what else could have happened? Anything involving football? Lane Johnson cleared to play after the adductor surgery. It's really hard not to say abductor, but whatever. Adductor surgery, okay? And on top of all that, one more thing happened. The Eagles got disrespected. Oh, the first time of the offseason, the Eagles get disrespected. Let us just bask in the doubt. Let us just bask in the idea that somebody thinks there are three offenses in the NFL better than the Philadelphia Eagles. And you know what? You can make a case for a bunch of them. But the number one offensive ranking that this guy gives to this particular team is mind-boggling. And we'll get to that a little bit later in the show. Before we really get things underway, I just want to thank the great people of the Michael Barkan Family and Friends Foundation, how great they are having me along for the ride yesterday as part of their annual golf outing. Just seeing so many great faces, so many great people. My friend Amy Fadul has been on the show a number of times. She was out there. Sean Kane, her husband, a producer for Phillies games there, for the Phillies pre- and post there at NBC Sports Philadelphia, calling up some old friends there. Ruben Amaro Jr. was out there. Mike Schmidt was out there. Tommy Green, Mickey Morandini, all these great guys were out there yesterday, all these great people. Leslie Goodell was out there. Just a phenomenal time we had raising money for a great cause, and it's just my honor to be a part of it. And the foursome I got matched up with, because here's how these things work. They take a I hate the word, but it's they take a person of note. I'll use that word, okay? And even that's blowing it out of proportion. They'll take someone in the media. There we go. Someone like myself, and they'll put them with a foursome. And that person, these are sponsors that have paid money and all that stuff. So you have a little bit of pressure, you know? You got to bring it. You got to really bring your A game out there. So I get paired up with these guys, and it's always the night before you're like, oh, who am I going to get paired up with? Hopefully they're good dudes. And I've been so lucky for the 4 years that I've participated in the Michael Barkan and Friends golf outing, I've got paired up with great dudes. And yesterday stayed right on par. Just awesome guys. One of the guys that we played with in the foursome is the definition of Renaissance man. Like this guy, again, we've referenced Ted Lasso, I think, a couple of different times this week on the show, but there's a great scene in Ted Lasso, if you're not familiar with it, where he plays darts. And the whole, I'll just say this, be curious, don't be judgmental. Okay, be curious, don't be judgmental. I think that's a great philosophy in general life. And this guy was the most curious fellow I have ever met. John Ritchie at WIP is one of the most curious people I've ever come across in my life. And this guy that I played golf with yesterday was just like, yeah, I always thought the cello was cool. So a year ago, I started playing the cello. Like one of these guys, right? Yeah, I started playing golf a couple years ago, and I just thought it was cool, so I just wanted to pick it up. And this guy was like in his 40s. And he just likes picking up different hobbies. Big reader, is a cigar smoker like myself. He just started smoking cigars like 2 years ago. Just thought it looked interesting, so I wanted to try it. So anyway, the funniest thing, though, was that he plays the cello. And in the last couple years, 2 years, I think he started picking up the cello. He goes, I go to recitals. And I'm like, oh, to pick up and like learn how to play like better? And he's like, no. I'm in the recital. It's me, and there's like 12-year-old kids. That are all like the parents are paying this big money for these kids to be in these like advanced cello classes and have recitals. And he'll be out there and someone will say, which one's yours? And he'll be like, me, I'm mine. I'm playing. I'm in the recital. And the guy's wife is sitting there applauding. It's great. He's like, and people like that just absolutely fascinate me. And if you want to know more about Michael Barkan and his great foundation, check out Barkan and Friends. The Barkan Family and Friends Foundation and all the great work they do with the Maggi family, friends of mine as well. It's a great thing, and I always appreciate being a part of it. And did I get a little rosy? Last year, I remember getting a little rosy in the cheeks. It was kissed by the sun. No, it's blending. Thank you, PJ. It's blending. Let's jump into this, there, family and friends of the Farzi Show. How about this little chestnut that was dropped on us yesterday by Keith Pompey, putting it out there. Toronto Raptors, former Toronto Raptors head coach Nick Nurse is meeting with the 76ers ownership and management this week, coming up in regards to the vacant head coaching position, according to league sources. I'm fine with this. I like Nick Nurse. I like Mike Budenholzer. There's three guys that are out there that if the Sixers go in that direction, I don't mind it. I'm happy. There's three guys. Like we were talking about, you know, leading up to the NFL draft, what names are out there that you would be happy that the Eagles landed at the 10th pick. You know, who would be the person that would make you? All right, yeah, I could do three people. I could see the Eagles taking. I'd be happy. It's a very similar situation here to who the Sixers could hire as the next head coach. I'd be very happy with Nick Nurse. I'd be very happy with Mike Budenholzer. I'd be very happy with Monty Williams. Now, Monty Williams of that group isn't one of those guys that has won a championship, unfortunately, recently, but he certainly made the Suns a very competitive basketball team. And yes, they did fizzle out in the playoffs this past year. I think if I had to go with a pecking order here, I think I would have to go in the order of Nick Nurse, Budenholzer, and then I'd have to go with Monty Williams. That would be my three. Those would be my three. Sam Cassell, I'm not flipping a table over, but I do think if you're going to make a change with your head coach and you want a different voice, then you got to make it a clean sweep. If you're going to bring in a different coach, that coach has to have his guys. He also has to have a clear path to do whatever he wants with a clean slate. And I think that's a little bit more difficult to do when it's a guy that's been here, whether that be even David Yeager, whether that even be Sam Cassell, whether that even be Dan Burke, whoever it might be. I think that that's a little bit of a stretch with this Sixers team, looking at a guy like Sam Cassell as the next head coach. I think you want to bring in somebody who has won, and I know Doc has won, but that was a long time ago. You'd be bringing in somebody, whether that be Nick Nurse, whether that be Mike Budenholzer. These are going to be hot names out there in the coaching market, but I would be most happy if it was one of those two guys, Budenholzer or Nurse, coming in here to take over as a Sixers head coach. I do think the fresh philosophy, I think there is a lot to be said for that. And I know that you boil it down to whether or not your stars are going to perform. And I look at this team still in the same mindset as I did right after the Game 7 loss to the Celtics. I look at it the same way as I don't expect more from James Harden. I don't expect more from Joel Embiid. Like this is what I expect from them. I expect great regular season numbers, and then I expect to fizzle out in the playoffs. If you do have a head coach out there that can find that next gear, or not even next gear, but just different style that would help this team win and maybe get past that point, then I'm all ears, because I want to prepare myself, yes, for disappointment, but I also want to prepare myself for the idea that maybe somebody else can crack this code. And maybe everything that I'm expecting to happen in this offseason, maybe it won't happen. Maybe the Sixers do decide to go in a different direction with James Harden. Maybe the Sixers do find a way to get more help for Joel Embiid. Maybe the Sixers do have not just more help for Joel Embiid, but somebody to compete on his same level. Because one of the things I had an issue with going into last year's offseason was not only find more help for Joel Embiid, but find someone that can be there right there with him. Someone to take the workload off of him. And someone else that can carry the Sixers for a certain amount of time if Joel Embiid is missing time during the regular season, or if Joel Embiid is missing more time in the postseason, find somebody else you can rely on during that time to help carry this team. And during the course of the season, when he's on the court with Joel Embiid, making sure that he doesn't have to drop 30, 35, 40 a night to make sure that this team's still winning. But somebody else that can come in there and drop 30, 35, 40 a night to make sure that this team is still winning. That's what the Sixers need to do in this offseason. I am still under the impression that a couple of things are going to happen. One, obviously, they're going to bring in a new head coach. I'm still under the impression that even though James Harden is going to opt out of his deal, I still think that there's a way that Daryl Morey is going to bring him back to Philadelphia. And I hope that doesn't happen, but I think it's going to happen. A couple of things had to go into this offseason. One was the coach. The other is moving on from James Harden. And the other is bringing somebody in to replace any type of production that James Harden had as a scorer and then take the scoring to the next level. Because James Harden, as we all know, on a consistent basis, wasn't there. And in the playoffs, throughout his career, has definitely pulled off disappearing acts. He'll go from scoring 40 or 45, and then he'll disappear with 9 points. How the hell does that happen? So somebody else can come in there and be more consistent. And I would love to say that's Tyrese Maxey stepping up. I just don't see it happening in the near future, unfortunately. I see a now steady growth, but not another huge jump for Tyrese Maxey. So that's what I'm looking at right now with this 76ers team, and that's what I'm expecting going into the offseason. If a couple of these things go right, then I might change my expectation for this Sixers team. But right now, where I'm at is still very much in the doom and gloom. I'll wait with great anticipation to see who the next Sixers head coach is. One of the things we didn't mention during yesterday's show was that Daryl Morey came out and just said, this isn't going to be something that happens quick. We're not going to hire the new coach tomorrow. We're not going to hire the new coach in a week. This is going to be, and he even said, forgive the word, this is going to be a long process. This is not going to be immediate. This is not going to be quick. We're going to take our time here, make sure we do everything right. And that's the way you have to do it. You just have to hope. In the meantime, no reports come out there about Nick Nurse now all of a sudden going to the Phoenix Suns or whatever. That's something that Sixers are also going to have to be cognizant of. But if you want me to have optimism, I think the first step is finding that new head coach, trying to get a sense of what his philosophy is going to be with and without James Harden, just to prepare for both scenarios. And then also, how is he going to get more out of Joel Embiid? How is he going to get more out of Tyrese Maxey? Maybe instead of focusing on what more Joel Embiid could do, maybe you could start focusing more on what Maxey could do more. Maybe he does take that giant leap forward. We saw that giant leap when he came in off his rookie year and Ben Simmons was holding out and he wasn't playing before the trade and Tyrese Maxey was the point guard. There was a lot more room for growth. And I know a lot of people were looking at Tyrese Maxey and saying, all right, well, he's going to take another step. He's going to take another huge step forward next year. And I thought, I don't know if that's possible because he went from literally coming off the bench to being a starter. That's a lot of room for, oh, look at those numbers from this year to next year. Now, his numbers did go up. He averaged 20 points a game this year, which is great. But to say that he's going to take another huge leap forward is tough. Now, what was really interesting about his maturation process this season, Tyrese Maxey, was that his three-point shooting escalated. He took, I think, one more three-point shot a game, if not two or three-point shots a game. He went from making, I think, 1.7 to 2.6. So that was a great jump for him. He shot 43% from beyond the arc. And like I said, he scored 20 points a game. That's an offensive player that I think will continue to grow. And when you look at other players around the league and you look at their numbers and their ascension to really being consistent scorers, even a guy like Jamal Murray, but oh my God, what a game he had last night, especially in the fourth quarter. Those are steps that you can see Tyrese Maxey taking. As he gets more confident from the outside, you'll see that his game continue to grow. And more consistent from the outside, you'll see his game continue to grow. The one thing that I know he can hang his hat on right now is slashing to the basket. If this next head coach can get the slash to the basket on the same level as, or rather, his outside shooting on the same level as his ability to slash to the rim, then you're going to be looking at, I believe, a very, very close, very all-star caliber type player in Tyrese Maxey. One thing I didn't know, and I read this in Keith Pompey's story that he wrote at Inquirer.com yesterday. I didn't know that. I didn't realize Nick Nurse was a two-time British basketball champion. I was unaware of that. I know that he was on the he was an assistant with the Raptors for a number of years, but I didn't realize that he had coached overseas and did himself a fine job. And I also knew that he coached in the G League, and the now known as G League, the Developmental League, is where he also won two championships. So, Nick Nurse, how about that? Just championships all over the place. I know that people are making a little bit of a stink over Nick Nurse coaching against the Sixers as often as he did, especially in the playoffs, and how he was crying and screaming and yelling for every single call for his players. The Toronto Raptors last year were very much outmatched by the Sixers. They're outmatched like the Nets were outmatched, but yet the Raptors figured out a way to weasel some wins there. But Nick Nurse knew the entire series he was going to have to bitch and moan and scream and yell to try to get every call or complain about every single call Joel Embiid was getting when he was fouled, legitimate or not. And I admired Nick Nurse for doing it. As I said, from a Philadelphia perspective, yes, it's annoying that he seems to now be bitching and moaning and he is getting the calls because he bitched and moaned the next game he got the calls. I give him credit. And this is funny because he could be the Sixers' next head coach. But I remember saying at the time, if that's our coach, if the roles are reversed and we're Raptors fans, you want him on the refs and riding the refs as much as he was. So you talk about the tactics that got brought up. Nick Nurse, when it comes to tactics, strategy, philosophy, understanding the rhythm and flow of the game and spacing, he can create that as a head coach. He does a phenomenal job doing that. But then the other aspect of the game, being able to reach your players, obviously good. And then also at the same time, being able to do the things on the court to help your team win, riding the refs being one of them, making in-game adjustments certainly being a big one. That's something that you want to see the Sixers be able to embrace next year. And Nick Nurse does check all those boxes. The reason I'm interested to see if the Sixers talk to Mike Budenholzer at all is that this is a guy that watched the maturation process of Giannis Antetokounmpo. This is a guy that watched the team being built with Drew Holiday getting extended, coming to the Milwaukee Bucks and getting a contract extension. Porter being up there and watching his game develop. Middleton being there and seeing his game develop. Like, this is a guy that was there watching a team on the rise. Watching a team get beat up by the Bucks and beat up by the Heat in the bubble, and then being able to get past the Heat, getting over that hump, like the Sixers can't get over the hump of the Celtics, unfortunately. And then being able to go into the conference finals, handle their business, go into the NBA finals, and obviously win a championship. That's a big thing. I've said it before. I know, and of course, why wouldn't it? Somebody wins a championship, somebody gets to their mountaintop, you expect them to obviously know what it takes to do it and do it again and again. There's only been two coaches in the history of the NBA, Pat Riley and Phil Jackson, that have won championships in two different cities, two different franchises. It's a tough job. It's a tough ask. No question about that. It's a tough ask. Oh, yeah, you did that thing over there that worked with those players? So can you do it over here and do it with these players? It's a very, very tough ask. And I'm just hoping that the Sixers, as we all are making the right decision. And can get us over that hump, because I am done with it. I think we all are. Nobody wants to look at an 82-game regular season and go, hey, you know what'll be fun? Get it bounced out of the second round of the playoffs again. Wait, it looks like I was wearing a visor, red dome, white forehead, rosy cheeks. Thanks, T-Bro. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I was. I was wearing my Jeff cap. Hey, this came out yesterday. Let's take a look at this. Dave Dombrowski was speaking to Scott Lauber of Inquirer.com, and he had some interesting things to say about where the Phillies are right now in the standings and the season and how things are going. This is specifically about Trey Turner. And I found it – this is as blunt, I think, as a president of baseball operations can go without completely throwing a player inappropriately under the bus. So I thought he did this in a very classy way. Here's what he told Scott Lauber. Trey Turner is one of the best players in the game of baseball, so I think he'll be fine. But yeah, I'm a little surprised that he hasn't started out, that he started out the way that he has. I'm not really sure why. He's been around for a long time. He's switched clubs. He works hard. He knows the hitting coach, knows some of the players on the team. I don't know if he's put too much expectations on himself. I don't think he will. I do think he will be much better as the year goes on. I'll absolutely be shocked if he doesn't. He goes on to say, I think the baseball world would be shocked as well if Trey Turner ends up not batting better than a 258 batting average. And I would agree. I'd be very shocked. But one of the things I like about that is that one of the things people have talked about is, oh, it's like Nick Castellanos. He's like the Nick Castellanos of this year, and next year he'll break out of it. I hope that's true, but that's not exactly a solid argument, all right? Because one player did it, means this player will do it. If this guy was good elsewhere, and this guy, and then good again, then this guy was good elsewhere, then he'll be good again here. Dave Dombrowski's highlighting all the excuses in that answer. In that statement, he's talking about Trey Turner. You should be comfortable already. This isn't Nick Castellanos, so you don't know anybody here. This isn't Nick Castellanos where you got to reintroduce, you got to introduce yourself to everybody. You're here with Bryce Harper, who you know. You know Kevin Long. You've played in the city of Philadelphia as a member of the Washington Nationals, so you know the building. It's not like that's foreign to you. And you've obviously been out there in LA in new blood, and you've produced as you were traded from Washington to Los Angeles. So this isn't your first rodeo of trying to learn a new environment. And you're also a veteran. The only thing that makes sense there is the expectations. And when you watch Trey Turner, you're watching a guy that looks like he is pressing. And the excuse, and I know I've harped on this, but I feel like this has opened up a window into the Phillies that is just dangerous. The idea of Trey Turner, and he is swinging and missing at pitches more than almost anybody in baseball. His swing, oh, I love this stat. His chase rate, I believe it's called, has gone up 10% from last year to this year, meaning he just swinging and missing at pitches more and more. And that's horrible. And when I see that, I see a guy that's pressing. If I'm Kevin Long and you got a pre-existing relationship with Trey Turner, or even you're Rob Thompson, I mean, do you listen to a guy like Bryce Harper? Do you say, take it easy, man? You know, be more selective at the plate. Because I think that would help Trey Turner a lot more than just free swinging up there. Swinging his way out of a slump does not seem like the best possible thing. Looking for consistency at the plate, I don't think you go up there hacking. I think you go up there looking for the pitch to hit. Not, oh, this one's good enough, I'll swing at it. That's where you get into trouble. That's where you get into so many 0-2 counts, as Trey Turner has done. And that is very troubling. But I like the idea of Dave Dombrowski being very open and honest and saying, like, look, find me the excuse. What excuse makes sense? He's not familiar with the ballpark. He played a lot of games here as a member of the Washington Nationals. He doesn't know the guys. He knows Bryce Harper. He knows his hitting coach. He should know these guys. That shouldn't be an excuse. Well, he's struggled before. Yeah, he's had struggles before, but he's found his way out of it. Dave Dombrowski is basically saying, this is a matter of Trey Turner squeezing the bat too tight, putting too much pressure on himself, having too high expectations. He'll find his way out of it. To speak blindly for a second, I think that a guy like Trey Turner is going to figure it out. I think that as the season goes on, it's not going to be a Nick Castellanos type year where we're looking at the end of the year. Why was $300 million given to this guy? What has he done to deserve that? Because we know none of us has seen it yet. We've seen it do it elsewhere. It's just a matter of it clicking into high gear here in Philadelphia. And I do think there's going to be a run here. Maybe it's June. Maybe it's July. Maybe it's later. I don't know. But I do think there's going to be a run here where we're going to see where that money went. And we're going to see that it is a good investment. And I do think the Phillies, as I said, really through all of last year, I thought Joe Girardi was going to get fired, and I thought the Phillies were going to make a run. I didn't know for sure if they're going to make the playoffs, but they were going to make a run. And boy, did they make a run. I think that you still have a better version of baseball in Kyle Schwarber. I think you have a better version of baseball in Trey Turner. When those guys click it, and by the way, Kyle Schwarber, 10 home runs already this season, so that's great. But when it comes to this, I think those two guys have a much better brand of baseball that you're going to see. And I'm surprised that you're getting from such a consistent basis what you're getting from Nick Castellanos and Bryce Harper and Bryson Stott. And I think other guys that have been streaky as well this year, Alec Boehm being one of them, although with runners in scoring position, he's been your most clutch performer. I will say that. But something else that I also find interesting is when you look at this team and the way that they came together last year, I still think that when push comes to shove, this is a team we're going to be talking about in late August and September as a team that'll be right there giving us, at the very least, those meaningful games. So I will cross my fingers for that. Overall, as a team, one of the other things Dave Dombrowski got into yesterday was that he was surprised that the Phillies have struggled as much as he was expecting a better brand of baseball from everybody as a team. He wasn't expecting to be 3 games under .500 on May 19th before they start this 3-game series with the Chicago Cubs. So let's hope that the president of baseball operations for the Phillies, him speaking publicly, catches some attention in that clubhouse and the attention of their manager, Rob Thompson. And we'll see what comes in after that. I mentioned some good news earlier. Huh? Lane Johnson releasing on social media yesterday that he has been officially cleared to start working out with the team again. That is some great news. He had the guy played with the adductor injury last year, and he came out and he just played, man. He played in the Super Bowl. He helped the Eagles offensive line be as steady as they were all season long. And I look at it as this, it goes without saying how important Lane Johnson is to this team, right? But seeing him fight through that last year, you talk about leadership, you talk about culture. One of the things I didn't even mention Well, we talked about that throughout the entire offseason, and we'll continue to do that. I mean, Sean Desai brought up the culture and how attractive that was to him, and walking through the building, what it was like with the players and the way the veterans really lead here. I know we talk about guys like Fletcher Cox and Brandon Graham and Jason Kelce, who certainly plays through injury. But Lane Johnson playing through that type of pain, Lane Johnson played through high ankle sprains like he has throughout his career consistently, unfortunately, but he's done it and it's been amazing. These guys really want to take up for one another. And that's one of the things, seeing the note about Lane Johnson yesterday being cleared to play. One of the things that it reminded me of is we talk a lot about the rah-rah stuff and how these guys are great at pep talks and just great at having each other's backs. What we don't talk about is the ability and the desire to not let anybody else down, especially on that offensive line. That's why Jason Kelce's playing through so many injuries. That's why you've seen guys like Jordan Mailata fight through injury. That's why you've seen guys like Lane Johnson, most notably, fight through injury. And this is also coming at a good time, because I thought it was interesting, and I played it for you yesterday with Jason Kelce talking about Isaac Seumalo and how much they're going to miss Isaac Seumalo on that offensive line. He almost was too good at honoring Isaac Seumalo's legacy at the guard position here with the Eagles, because he was so good at honoring him and he was building him up so much. I was like, are we going to be okay? Like, he's starting to concern me here. He's so great. We're not going to replace him. Somebody else will be playing that position, but you can't replace Isaac Seumalo. And then he went on, he said glowing things about Cam Jurgens, but he also said, and this is the thing that hasn't been highlighted as much, he's interested to see who's going to be the guy to step up. I thought it was just going to be Cam Jurgens, and that's that. Turns out it's going to be a big fight, going to be a big battle at the right guard spot to see who takes over for Isaac Seumalo. But very interesting thing that I heard from Jason Kelce yesterday, and then also got me thinking about it again with Lane Johnson coming back from the injury. While I'm speaking about the Eagles here, oh, and one last thing. A.J. Brown addressed the media. Dallas Goedert addressed the media. We talked about Jason Kelce addressing the media. One of the things I found really interesting, oh, man, excuse me. Allergies are just killing me today. One of the things I did find really interesting. Excuse me. Oh, that's real. That's a real sneeze right there, folks. One of the things I really did find interesting yesterday was everyone talked about the hunger. When you lose a championship as a city, and yes, unfortunately, we have a lot of experience in the matter. When you lose a championship, you want to hear certain things from your team the following year. And ultimately, what matters? What matters is how they perform in the field. But we have to wait a while before that actually happens. Whether it's the Phillies, whether it's the Eagles, you want to hear about how hungry they are to make it back to that same stage and have another crack at winning. And when teams lose championships, I love the stories of guys that stay out there on the field for a little bit to watch the confetti fall and watch another team celebrate so they know what it looks like, so they can vision it, and that's where I want to be next year, you know? Everybody to a man has talked about how that has made them more hungry. You've heard exactly what you want to hear. Not that anyone's going to come out after a championship and be like, hey, well, we made it to the Super Bowl. We lost. We made it to the Super Bowl. That was cool. Everyone rested on their laurels. That's not going to happen. But when you talk about the dedication and people still being the first to leave or first to show up and last to leave, and dedication to the film room and helping the young guys in the building, you know, start their legacy in Philadelphia and start that new chapter, it is a comforting thing to know that nothing is lost with these guys, which is fantastic. And you know what also helps? The doubters, ladies and gentlemen. The doubters always help. And, you know, if you were to tell me the Eagles have a top five offense, I would say, that's all? Only a top five offense? Mike Martz, as our friends here at Eagle Nation point out, Super Bowl champion, offensive coordinator, greatest show on turf for people that don't know. He had some interesting things to say on the 33rd team, which is a great publication that we've talked about many times on the show. Our friend Clay Harbor has he's made contributions to the 33rd team. Well, Mike Martz wrote this article for the 33rd team, ranking the offensive units throughout the NFL. He has ranked the Eagles as number four. Now, who's ahead of him? The San Francisco 49ers. What? You lost me already. Then the Kansas City Chiefs. Then the Detroit Lions. I did find it interesting when he was talking about the Detroit Lions and how good they were. He talked a lot about their defense. Thought this was offensive rankings. Then he listed the Philadelphia Eagles. Let the doubters start off early this year, huh? Let the doubters start off early. And I know people will say, you know, no one likes this. We don't care. Well, we kind of care. And you know what's funny about that underdog team? They also cared. They cared mightily because they used that motivation to win a Super Bowl. So when it comes to Mike Martz doubting this Eagles roster as much as he does already, I find it interesting that they get the slight. Now, let's get into the reasoning here. First off, San Francisco. All right, the San Francisco 49ers. Who's going to be their quarterback next year? And I know they had three different quarterbacks, right? Last year, they were on, what, their fifth quarterback, actually, in the NFC Championship game, and they were still in the NFC Championship game. I get that. And Christian McCaffrey and Deebo Samuel, all these guys are great and fantastic, whatever. Brandon Ayuk, right, we can get into that. Their offensive line, all that stuff. But the biggest thing that is interesting to me, you don't even know for sure who their quarterback is going to be. Brock Purdy? You're really going to go with Brock Purdy? You're going to go with Brock Purdy and have an offense as your top-ranked offense in the NFL. Number one offense in the NFL. And you're going to base yourselves on your Brock Purdy. Okay, I don't feel like there's any more reason to discuss it. That's dumb. Having the San Francisco 49ers the best offense in the NFL. They got weapons, but when your quarterback is a big old fat question mark, I don't see how you can just go ahead and rank them. Look, I'm not even arguing for the Eagles to be number one, because I think when you have Jalen Hurts and you have Patrick Mahomes, I think it's pretty easy to look at it and go, oh yeah, those offenses are stacked. The biggest thing here is that the Eagles offensive line is as good as it is and still could be the best offensive line in football. And we'll see who does take over that right guard spot. And if it is Cam Jurgens, I got a lot of confidence. And Jason Kelsey seems to, yes, have confidence that it will be Cam Jurgens, but it will be a fight. He's not just going to go and award the right guard position when A, it's not his to give, and B, he's not going to do it before training camp even starts and make anybody else who's competing for the spot go, well, why am I even trying? But the smart money says it's Cam Jurgens. So as this offseason goes on, as this argument goes on, and he starts talking about the Kansas City Chiefs, Mike Martz, he's got the 49ers, he's got the Kansas City Chiefs, and then he's got the Detroit Lions. You're basing this on an offense that has a quarterback named Jared Goff, who played better than he has in a long time towards the end of the second half of the season, played a lot better. Even the second half of the game against the Eagles played a lot better. But then also you're basing it on the idea that DeAndre Swift is now a member of the Philadelphia Eagles and Jahmyr Gibbs is going to take their offense to the next level. So you're basing it on Jared Goff and a rookie running back. I'm going to go ahead and pump my brakes on that one too. So you want to put the Kansas City Chiefs ahead of the Eagles? I get it. San Francisco 49ers? Huh? Detroit Lions? What? Ahead of the Philadelphia Eagles? Hey, Jalen Hurts, you might have just signed the biggest contract in the history of the NFL before it was outdone by Lamar Jackson, whatever. You might have just worked your ass off to get that money, to get to a Super Bowl, to be the runner-up in the MVP race. But this other offense, quarterbacked by Jared Goff, is better than you? This other offense, quarterbacked by one of three different dudes, is better than you? Okay. And this isn't just some, you know, national broadcaster to be like, you know who really sucks? The Eagles. This is a guy that was an offensive coordinator of the NFL. He does know what to look for. I give Mike Martz credit for that. But to put the Eagles fourth? Yeah. There's one offense that you could argue is better than the Eagles. I mean, by the way, the Bills were fifth, okay? But even the Bills are a team that I think I would put in the top three. And you can make arguments about that. But for me, the X factor is I think the clear-cut one and two is the Eagles and the Chiefs. And you can argue who goes back and forth there. I how do I go against Patrick Mahomes? I can't. So I would go Chiefs one, Eagles two, Bills three. And yes, the other team's got weapons, but you're relying on their quarterbacks? No thanks. The other thing that Mike Martz went into there in the article was how the Eagles are a – what's the word? System offense. In the article, we refer to the Eagles offense as a system offense. Well, first off, everyone's got a system. And second, Jalen Hurts is the system. We got into this argument last year with Micah Parsons. Is it Hurts or is it the team? Well, Hurts kind of is good. you know what? You know, one thing we didn't mention when Hurts signed that big contract, you know who he really needed to thank? Gardner Minshew for being terrible. But I just can't believe after an MVP caliber season, a Super Bowl appearance, his team financially investing in him the way that they did, after the improvement, just a flat out improvement from year one as a start of year two. And people want to look at this offense in doubt and say this isn't even a top two offense. It's top four, Mike Marsh's opinion. That's crazy to me, folks. That just seems crazy. Let the disrespect begin. It's already underway. How about that? Let me tell you about Steven Singer of Steven Singer Jewelers, the other corner of 8th and Walnut, right there on Jewelers Row. For over 40 years, Steven has been in the love business in Philadelphia, helping people get engaged and fall in love, because that's what Steven loves. He loves being in the love business. Whether it's the beautiful gold dip roses dipped in beautiful, shimmering 24-karat gold, or is the dazzling diamonds that wow you every time you walk into the other corner of 8th and Walnut. And here's what Steven likes to promise you. The perfect price. And it's the only jeweler that offers that perfect price. So when you walk in, you can relax, you can feel comfortable about what it is that you're going to buy, because a real jewelry expert is going to treat you like a real family member at the other corner of 8th and Walnut. So do what I do. Trust the man, Steven Singer of Steven Singer Jewelers. One place, one price, home of the perfect price, online at IHateStevenSinger.com. That's IHateStevenSinger.com. Let me tell you about Manscaped, the leader in below-the-waist grooming. Join 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and their skin-safe technology that allows you to manscape with confidence and comfort. And right now, you get their best hygiene bundle yet, their Platinum Package 4.0. It includes their Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, as well as their Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer. And yes, comes with skin-safe technology that helps reduce the risk of nicks. So check out Manscaped. Use promo code Farzy for 20% off and free shipping. That's 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com. How about our friends at Freestone Farm CBD? Freestone Farm CBD, freestonefarmcbd.com. You'll love their tropical-tasting Bayox that clocks in at a chart-topping 24.1%. And Super CBD, which is half Hindu, Kush. And 21%. Genetics of these guys are off the charts. So check out Freestone Farm CBD, freestonefarmcbd.com. Use promo code Farzy for 20% off at Freestone Farm CBD, freestonefarmcbd.com. How about the amazing people at PHL Sports Station, Philadelphia Sports Station, enhancing your Philadelphia sports fan experience across all social media and blogs? That's PHLSportsStation.com. Let's get to the chat check and see how you beautiful people are doing on this fine, fine morning. I want to see how everyone's doing. Let's start it off with the Jake Immediate chat. Jason A-Team. Eagles! Nice. Farzay! Thank you, Jason. Flip it over to... who do we have over here on our Farzay Show YouTube channel? What's going on? I'm going to just put this thing up one more time so that you guys don't have to watch me relieve myself of my allergies. April, good morning. Nice to see you. April, Farzy in the field from the golf tourney? I don't think I can pull that one off, unfortunately, April. Being that I am now my own private media entity, going to another media entity and getting content out of it, I didn't feel like I would be doing the right thing in that situation. But I want to do that again. We did that with the Nasty Knuckles guys at Athletes for a Cure. And one of the reasons I did that was so I could gather content and talk to people and interview some people. And that was an absolute joy to do. We'll do that again. I promise you. And one of the things I do want to do is go out there on the field again and just kind of get a vibe for where everybody's at with the Sixers team and what they want to see the Sixers do in the very near future. Also expectations for the Eagles. And the Sixers. Let's see here. Sean Kilray, what's going on? RJ is live. What's up, RJ? Getting Nick Nurse will be the final infinity stone into battling the refs for calls. But I do like it. RJ, that is a phenomenal way to put that. Who would be Thanos in that? Would Maury be Thanos? Because he's the guy that kind of brought it all together. Thanos, he has the Infinity Stone. I will argue and get every call now. James Harden will lead the league in free throw attempts. Joel Embiid, lead the league in free throw attempts. Nick Nurse will not be teed up for arguing with officials. That is phenomenal. RJ, thank you for that laugh. That has cured my allergies. April, little red on the dome. Not as bad as last year. I was kissed by the sun last year, April. The sun just made out with me. Last year, oh, baby, I was a lobster. T-Bro, Farzi, looks like you were wearing a visor with a rose. Yeah, I did have the Jeff cap. I rocked the Jeff cap. And I'm proud of myself. I didn't wear the sunglasses that much. I know I got a little of the whiteness right here, right? All right. A little of the sunglass tan, but not so much. Not so much as last year. Last year, it was definitely Red Lobster and like goggle eyes. I'm a big dumb idiot. Travis Rankin told y'all my Heat would beat that booty. my Heat would beat that booty. Now you reminded me, I got a text like the only Heat fan I know who's from Miami. It was before LeBron got there. But living the dream, PJ. How about, oh, look at you. PJ's asking everyone how they're doing. Sean Kilrain. Trey will definitely figure it out. He's in a funk and it's early still. I see him going big moving forward. Well, one of the other things that was pointed out by Dave Dombrowski that I did like was how he said it's not early anymore. Scott Lauber started out his article by saying, you know, a lot of people will say, you know, it's early. It's early. It's May 19th. You're three games under 500 against these teams that are, and you're going to be going up against a 10-game road trip in the not too distant future. You got the Cubs battling right now as well. This isn't going to be easy. So I'd really like to see what the Phillies are going to be doing in the very near future to try to get Trey Turner going. I know he had a day off yesterday, but I'm still very much in the mindset that this guy needs a break. He needs a reset. Sometimes stepping away for a game or two, sitting there watching, I think that can do wonders for a guy. Just to kind of take a bird's eye view from it for a second, and then move on from there. Sometimes it helps. And this could be one of those instances. Sean Gillespie, what's going on? Philly Insider Podcast. I mean, Steen should complete for right guard. Okay, yeah. If I had to guess, good swing tackle if he doesn't win the right guard spot. Yeah. I think he'll, I mean, I think he's definitely in the conversation. The other thing that's interesting is Jason Kelsey has a vested interest in Cam Jurgens because, as we all know, he helped scout Cam Jurgens. So to get his feet wet at all at the NFL level, I think is something that Jason Kelsey wants to see. I do think you're going to see the rookie compete as well, but I think you're going to see Cam Jurgens end up winning the spot. And I think you would agree with that as well. Philly Insider Podcast. Mihai Sanchez, what's going on? Doctor to nurse. Also, after banning the shift, can MLB also ban West Coast trips from East Coast teams in bullpen games? I see starters and not openers. Therefore, too many pitching changes. I think we're doing a lot better in the pitching change game, unfortunately. But I agree with you. I hate West Coast trips. I hate West Coast trips. The one game against Colorado where the Phillies were like in the sixth inning, 50 minutes into the game, I was like, awesome. This is great. This is the most efficient brand of baseball I've ever seen. And it did cause me, if you remember, it did cause me to look up the fastest nine inning baseball game ever, which was, as I mentioned, that 51 minutes. And it didn't involve the Phillies. It was the Phillies and the New York Giants of the baseball world. What was it, 1919? I think it was 1919. Yeah. Travis Rickett, I believe it is. Yeah, whoever sits between Lane and Kelsey will be good regardless. Most likely. Heat will gladly stomp them Celtics for the Sixers. Heat is heating up on another level right now. Trust me. Travis, I trust you. Sean Gillespie, Martz is going the hot take route to be the best whiners, even if they have a quarterback. Detroit? Question mark. Yeah, man, it's crazy. Dan Schwartz. Well, here's the thing with Martz. I think Martz is in a line of thinking like, I did this. I know more than you. And he does. He knows more than me. But if you're ranking teams, I think we could all objectively look at it and go, dude, you're trying to sound too smart. You're going out of your way to ignore the obvious just to try to sound smarter, which I guess you could put it out there as a hot take. But for me, I just read it and I go, no. Like, what? San Francisco? What? All right. Dan Schwartz. What's up, Dan Schwartz? Basketball freedom. Basketball freedom. Strippers making it rain. Tons of scoring in bed. That's what we do in parentheses. And being able to do whatever the bleep I want to with no consequences while not having to give effort on the court. Hey, Dan Schwartz, I never asked you that question. Are you related to Jim Schwartz? Armando, what's up, Armando? You know something when the Sixers lost the seventh game. Fair enough. I just use a regular save, y'all. It works every time. What, Travis? I see it. Jeff, what's up, Jeff? Jeff says, could the Sixers be replacing a doc for a nurse? Bring him here. Dan Schwartz says he is related to former Eagles defensive coordinator Jim Schwartz, only related in the sense that both Jim and I think signing Harden is a terrible move. You know what? I actually miss Jim Schwartz. I thought Jim Schwartz was a lot of fun. I know everyone sticks defense and everything, but you know, he wasn't a defensive coordinator when they won the Super Bowl. And I know that they put up, they were terrible, but it was the greatest quarterback ever. I mean, I will give him that. I like that Jim Schwartz was such a big baseball guy. He always worked baseball into his press conferences, whatever. I'll tell you about Jim Palmer. Jim Palmer was great. That's my horrible Jim Schwartz impression. Armando, I said to myself, Armando, you're all about the caps today. Is your caps lock on or are you really that angry? Armando, I said to myself, I win because I don't have to see Doc. Rivers for two more years. So is better loss sometime. What? April, Turner is definitely in his own head. No timeline for getting past that, unfortunately. Goo! I wish there'd be something to get past. I wish there'd be a timeline. But unfortunately, April, I do agree. That it's one of those things you just got to sit and wait out. I talked about Aaron Nola in a dead arm period, maybe pitching his way through it. I don't know what the hell's going on with Trey Turner. But maybe just take a step back. Just to take a breather. Look. I'm saying this after he had a multi-hit game in the final game of the three-game series that got swept out of San Francisco that just ended 2 days ago. So maybe he's a step ahead of me. Maybe he's already on the other side of it. And this is just something that he needs to do to make sure that he can, find consistency. But if Trey Turner goes through another struggle-filled performance today, I don't see how you don't just sit him. I'm not saying you bench him. I'm not saying you put $300 million on the bench. I'm saying tonight's an off night for you. Tomorrow's an off night for you. Like whatever it might be, just give him a minute. It's a long season. See if him stepping away, maybe that's him getting in the cage and just making solid contact and getting that confidence back. Maybe a couple of good BP sessions. Maybe have him pinch hit in a situation against a pitcher that he's had some good numbers against. Against in his career, something like that, and he just jump-started that way. I'm not saying, well, obviously, you got to bench Trey Turner and Josh Harrison should be your second baseman and Bryson Stott should move to shortstop. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying, take a breather. Chill out, man. Call my friends at Freestone Farm CBD. Anyway, so that's where I'm at right now with Trey Turner, and that's where I'll be at for quite some time. Until he snaps out of it. 2 for 5 in his last game. Got the average back up to 262. So there's that. Thanks, everybody in the chat. You guys are great as per usual. Let me get into this Philly series that's starting off tonight. It's the Phillies and the Chicago Cubs for a three-game series at Citizens Bank Park in South Philadelphia. First game is tonight, 7:05 start time. Marcus Stroman of Stroman Rolls. He'll get the start for the Cubs. Ranger Suarez back on the bump for the Phillies. Phillies left-handed pitcher made his season debut against the Colorado Rockies just last week and pitched as good as you can expect. Three earned runs, seven hits, four innings of work. Great to see that. He did issue one walk. He struck out four. One thing I did take away from Ranger Suarez's last start, his slider was looking crisp. He struggled with the curveball, struggled locating that. But one of the really interesting things, I loved watching this. First couple innings, he was no control over his curveball. It was sailing out of his hand. And that had me a little concerned that he was going to try to locate that and he was going to hang one and it was going to get belted. That did not happen. And then as the game went on, especially in that fourth inning, you saw Ranger Suarez really start to locate that curveball. And he even got a couple of swings and misses, got a couple of strikeouts on it as well. And I thought, wow, what a difference a couple of innings makes for this guy. I got some big expectations for Ranger Suarez tonight. I'm going to say Ranger Suarez tonight gives you six innings of, I'm going to go two-run baseball. Better than a quality start. I'm going to say he gives you six innings tonight, gives the bullpen a little bit of a break. The only reason I don't say he goes longer is because the Phillies are still in the process of stretching him out. Forget his pitch total. He went 72 pitches. So I think the goal was to get him to around 75, and they cut it off at 72. They didn't want him to have one more up-down. Anyway, so they got him out at that point. Plus, if you pitch one morning, you're going to go over 75. But anyway, not the point. So they're still in the process of stretching him out. So I still say six innings, two-run baseball. I think that's what we see tonight. As for his opponent this evening, once again, Marcus Stroman of Stroman Rolls. I can't say his name without saying that. Rest in peace, Harry Callis. Marcus Stroman is coming off a really rough outing. His worst of the season. So he'll be looking for a get-right game, if you will. But in his last start, it was against the Minnesota Twins. It was a 16-3 loss. He allowed six runs, all of them earned on seven hits, a home run, two walks in just 2 2/3. So that was no bueno. No bueno for him. But the Phillies will be back at it tonight, 7:05 South Philly. They'll start this nice little homestand here before going out on the road. Going out on the road for a 10-game road trip that just feels like it is right around the corner. And why is it right around the corner? Because it is. By the way, I wanted to get to the Cubs. Yeah, the Phillies have a 6-game homestand here, 3 with Chicago, 3 with Arizona, then 4 in Atlanta, 3 in New York, 3 in Washington. Pots and pans. Cubs coming to town 19-24 on the regular season. So that's where we're at with all things baseball. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. You guys are great as per usual. Very eager to see what's coming about over the weekend when it comes to the Sixers head coaching search. Any more rumors or reports about who else they're going to sit down with after they sit down with Nick Nurse? Perhaps Nick Nurse wants. Perhaps Nick Nurse is the guy that they want, and they've wanted the whole time, and they don't let him leave the building. Anyway, it's supposed to happen next week, so we'll continue to follow that story. Thanks, everyone, at the Jacob Media YouTube channel. Hey, catch me a little bit later today, the show that follows our show. The Jacob Media YouTube channel is Birds 365 with Jody Mack and Johnny Mack. I will be a guest on that show, so we'll be talking some more Eagles football there. And I'll be back with you guys tomorrow or tonight as well, the Jacob Media YouTube channel, for the Phillies postgame show. So make sure you guys catch that also. Jim Hyder produced the program for us. Thanks, everybody, on the Jacob Media YouTube channel and Farzy Show YouTube channel. Make sure you guys hit subscribe. Make sure you guys hit like. Make sure you guys follow the show and download the podcast and all that stuff for the Farzy Show. Appreciate you guys. Have a great weekend. Hope to see some of you with me tonight. This Friday night after Phillies and Cubs start their 3-game set. Thanks, everybody. See you later.